Bhatuhu, brothers, Puraha, from the palace, Marmasu, in the core of the heart, Taritaha, being afflicted, Api, in spite of, Saha, he, Vidura, Ittham, like this, Ati Ulvana, severely, Karna, ear, Banahi, by the arrows, Gatavyathaha, without being sorry, Ayat, excited, Uru, great, Manayanaha, so thinking. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Thus being pierced by the arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of his external energy to be supreme. Please repeat after me. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by any awkward position created by the external energy of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 3.27, it is stated, Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha ahankara vimhuratma kartaham iti mannate. A conditioned soul is absorbed in material existence under the influence of different modes of external energy. Absorbed in the false ego, he thinks that he is doing everything by himself. The external energy of the Lord, the material nature, is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord, and the conditioned soul is fully under the grip of the external energy. Therefore, the conditioned soul is fully under the control of the law of the Lord. But due to illusion only, he thinks himself independent in his activities. Duryodhana was acting under the influence of the external nature by which he would be vanquished at the ultimate end. He could not accept the sound advice of Vidura, but on the contrary, he insulted that great soul who was a well-wisher of his whole family. Vidura could understand this because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress in the path towards his own ruination. He therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Yet, he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the palace and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana, and instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The word Gatavyatha, meaning without being sorry, is significant here, because Vidura was relieved from the tribulation which troubled every man entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow, because his brother was meant for ruination. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally.
Hare Krishna. Is Prabhupada Hindi online? 106 FM. Radio Maharashtra. Sir, Prasad Mitra Shastra Mundan Radio. 106 FM. Jisko Hindi mein online karna hai, 106 FM. Aur Prasad Mahal mein kisi ne jiske paas radio nahi hai, yahan par alag se intizam kiya hua hai.
Swayam dhanurdari nidhaya mayam dhatu puro marmasutari topi saitham uttulla nakarna vanai gata vyathoyad urumanayanaha. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. So, the last effort was made by Krishna to stop the battle of Kurukshetra. Actually, Duryodhana was hell-bent on having a battle, having a fight with the Pandavas. Many great souls, many saintly personalities tried to prevent that battle from taking place. Vasudev tried, Bhishma tried, Gandhari tried, Maitreya Rishi tried, but in this way so many people tried to give good advice to Duryodhana. The advice was very simple: look, give the Pandavas their share and avoid any family feud. The battle is going to take place between two brothers, two lines of the same family, Kauravas and Pandavas, Dhritarashtra's son and Pandu's son. Dhritarashtra's son headed by Duryodhana, and Pandavas, the five brothers. Actually, when Krishna comes, automatically a situation creates where the sadhus go on one side and the duskritas, the miscreants, the demons go into the other side. Krishna comes to Paritranaya Sadhunam and Vinashaya to Dushkritam. And when Krishna comes, it becomes very apparent. The sadhus automatically become attracted to Krishna. That is the nature of the sadhus, that is the nature of the devotees. They're devotees of Krishna. They're just hankering for Krishna's association. They're hankering to serve Krishna. So when Krishna personally comes to the planet, then naturally the devotees become attracted towards him. And when Krishna comes, the demons who are actually offensive to Krishna, they become more offensive to Krishna. So in this way, the two sides automatically take place. These two sides automatically generate. Sadhu Duskritina, devotees, offenders. Like we see, like Duryodhana just couldn't stand Krishna. Dushyasana, Shalva, Shishupal, Dantavakra, Kamsa, Jarasandha, they became natural enemies of Krishna. Although Krishna did not do anything to them. Krishna did not go out of his way to harm them or hurt them. But they just, because the demoniac individuals are averse to Krishna. They just can't tolerate Krishna. What they cannot tolerate is Krishna's glory. What they cannot tolerate is Krishna's greatness. So that's why they become offensive towards Krishna. Materialistic people, demons are the ultimate materialistic mentality. That is what happens. Materialistic mentality means averse to Krishna. And they go out of their way to offend Krishna and his devotee. The Pandavas, they were so gentle, they're so noble, they're so honorable. From their childhood, only Bhima was a little arrogant. And that is how actually the animosity developed. They would play, the children, Kauravas and Pandavas, they're of the same, similar age, so naturally they're cousins. They used to play. And Bhima was very powerful and Bhima was very aggressive. So when some Kauravas children would climb a tree, Bhima would shake the tree so hard that they would fall from the tree. When they would go for a swim, Bhima would just grab a few of them and go under the water, make them suffocate. And this is what was causing them to become envious about him. And as it is, the main problem actually stemmed from the envy. Envy caused out of disappointment, frustration in fulfilling their desires. It actually started with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was born blind. Therefore, although he was the elder brother, although he was the natural successor to the throne, he could not become the king. That was his frustration. That he was actually the king. He was supposed to be the king, but he couldn't become a king because he was blind. And as a result of that, Pandu became the king, the younger brother. But Pandu was very, very obedient and loyal to his elder brother. He always looked for his elder brother's welfare. And Pandu and Dhritarashtra did not have any problem, any conflict. As long as Pandu was there, Dhritarashtra was very happily situated. The trouble actually started after Pandu's death. Then Dhritarashtra became the king. Although blind, but there was nobody to take the kingdom. So he naturally became the king, and Bhishma was maintaining the kingdom. Bhishma was, this is another unfortunate happening in the history of India, Mahabharata. Bhishma was actually the national successor to the throne. And he was most qualified. Bhishma was the son of Shantanu, the king, from Mother Ganges. Ganga came down to the earth planet, although she is a celestial personality, but she came up to the earth planet to become the wife of Shantanu. And she had a condition. She actually came with a purpose. She came with the purpose to deliver the 8 Vasus, 7 of them. And 8 of them were cursed by Vasishtha, that they would have to take birth, all the demigods, they were cursed to take birth in the earth planet. because they stole the cow of Vashishtha Nandini. So Vashishtha cursed them that you fall down to the earth planet and live there like human beings. So they begged him to withdraw the curse. Vashishtha said, the words that go out of my mouth will never go in vain. These personalities are so powerful. Actually, these personalities are so wonderfully situated in truthfulness that whatever they say becomes truth. These are the exalted, how exalted these personalities are. So Vashishtha said that, look, my word is not going to go in vain. Since I say it, it will happen. But right after your birth, you will become delivered. But the one who stole the cow, one who physically stole the cow, he will have to stay on the earth planet for a long, long time. So the Vasus then approached Ganga. They didn't want to stay in the womb of an ordinary human being. So they requested Ganga to become their mother. And there was another background to that also, that Shantanu in his previous life was a king called Mahabhisha, who due to his pious activities was elevated to Brahmaloka, to Satyaloka, in the assembly of Lord Brahma. So one day, when he was sitting with other members of the Brahma's assembly in Brahma's court, then Ganga came there. And in the breeze, Ganga's sari got misplaced, got moved, and her breast became exposed. So at that time, everybody casted their glance downwards. But Mahabhisha just kept on looking at her beauty. So Brahma noticed that. And Brahma said, you are not fit to be in Satyaloka. You still have lusty desires. So go to the earth planet to fulfill your lust. And as a result of that, Mahabhisha fell from Satyaloka and he was born as King Shantanu. And because he desired Ganga, his desire was fulfilled. Ganga became his wife. So these are the two reasons why Ganga came and became the wife of Shantanu. One, because Shantanu desired her and that desire was fulfilled. And the other one was the eight Vasus. One did not want to take birth in an ordinary womb. They were the demigods, therefore they requested Ganga to become their mother. So in order to fulfill that purpose, when Ganga got married to Shantanu, Ganga made a condition that Shantanu would never question her actions. Shantanu would never try to prevent her from doing whatever she wanted to do and will never question her action. And she said that if you do that, then I'll leave you. So Shantanu agreed because he was so overwhelmed with his desire for Ganga that he just agreed with any condition in order to get her. And then Ganga became his wife. A child was born. What did Ganga do? Took the newborn baby and just put the baby in the river. Now we can well imagine how difficult the situation must have been. Like when a baby is born, how everyone becomes so happy, so joyful. It becomes a big festival for everyone. Now, not just the child is born, the king's son is born, and the first child. The whole kingdom was vibrant with joy. the whole kingdom was bouncing with festivity. But right after the childbirth, what does the queen do? She takes the baby, newborn baby, walks up to the river, drops the baby in the river. Shantanu remembered his condition, never would prevent her from doing whatever she wanted to do. So he was silent, didn't question, didn't try to stop her. In this way, one after another, 7 children were drowned in the river. And then when the 8th child was born, and Ganga was about to carry the baby to the river, Shantanu couldn't contain himself, couldn't restrain himself. He just went and said, "Why are you doing this? Please spare this child. How can you act in such a cruel way? Being a mother, you are killing your newborn babies one after another in this way." Now we can see the link. 7 were delivered right after their birth. But the 8th one, it was meant to be on the earth planet for a long, long time. So Shantanu stops her. In this way you can see the how relevant this, how appropriate this verse is. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sadhushya. In the material nature, everything is happening by the arrangement of guna and karma. The 3 modes are there, and individual's karma is there. The karmic reactions are taking place in different modes, and a living entity like a puppet, he is acting. Prakriti kriyamana. And also, karmana daiva netrena janta deva papatra. Daiva netrena, the divine eyes are actually watching and they are making all the arrangements. According to our karmana, according to our past actions, we are just getting the results of our actions. So, so Vishnu was spared. But Ganga told Shantanu, "Okay, I will spare this child, but I will take him with me because the baby will need my care and attention, my nursing. And so when he becomes, when he grows up, I'll bring him back to you." Saying that, Ganga left and went back to the heavenly planet. There, this child was brought up in the most illustrious way. He studied under the tutelage of Brihaspati. That's why you can see he is one of the most wise persons. Brihaspati, the guru of the demigods, was his teacher. And Parashuram, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who came to annihilate the Kshatriyas for 21 times. Single-handedly he wiped out all the Kshatriyas. We can well imagine, right? What a powerful personality. After all, he is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shaktavishampaya. And he taught him the art of warfare. Military guru, military science is studied under his tutelage. So scripturally he had a perfect understanding from Brihaspati, and in his military art he was one of the most brilliant personalities. And then Ganga returns him to Shantanu. Shantanu and Bhishma became constant companions. Shantanu could not bear to separates him from him even for a moment. That is how attached he was to Bhishma, to Shantanu, Devavrata. But then another unfortunate incident takes place. Shantanu comes across Satyavati and becomes attracted to her. She was the foster daughter of a fisherman, the king of the fishermen. She used to take people across the river Ganges in a boat. So when Shantanu saw her, Shantanu actually became attracted by her bodily fragrance. So his body had such amazing fragrance that Padmagandha, her name was the fragrance of lotus. And that fragrance used to spread to the radius to the extent of about 20 miles. And while hunting in the forest, Shantanu got the fragrance and he became attracted. What's all this beautiful fragrance is coming? And he, following the fragrance, he comes to this beautiful young girl ferrying the passengers across the river. She asked who she was. He asked who she was. And she told him that she was the daughter of such and such person, who was actually her foster father. And so Shantanu goes to him and tells him, expresses his desire to marry his daughter. Now we can well imagine what an amazing proposal it was. The king of the entire earth planet is going to a fisherman asking his daughter to be his queen. And the fisherman is also such an amazing character. He says that I will give my daughter to you only on one condition, that her children, her son, will become the king. So Shantanu said, look, that's not possible because I already have a son who is already not only the eldest in the family, he is my only son and he has already been coronated as the crown prince. So he said, let's forget about my daughter. So he declined the offer. And there was a reason why he did that, because Satyavati's horoscope says that her son would become the king. So it was the reading of the horoscope. So he wanted to make sure that her son, daughter's son, would become the king, because he wanted to match the incidents with the horoscope. Then Shantanu, dejected with a broken heart, he came back to his palace. Bhishma could recognize something terrible must have happened to his father. And he asked his father, what happened? And he refused to say anything. He said, no, nothing was wrong, everything was alright. But then he went to the chariot driver and asked him what actually happened that day when his father went hunting. The chariot driver told him about the whole incident. Bhishma said, take me to that person. And he went, and Dhivaraj, the king of the fishermen, leader of the fishermen, told him the same thing. Look, I don't have anything against offering my daughter to your father, but the thing is that I have a condition that my daughter's son has to become the king. Then Bhishma said, okay, fine. I will forego my claim over the throne. And this fisherman was such a smart character. He said, okay, you may renounce your claim over the throne, but what about your children? They'll start fighting with my daughter's offspring. over the throne. So then he took Devavrata, takes a vow, okay, I'll never get married. So this is the Vedic culture. To please, to satisfy the father's desire, the son is prepared to go to any extent and make any sacrifice. These are the exemplary personalities in the Vedic culture. So Bhishma, then the fisherman's king did not have any objection in offering his daughter. So he said, okay, and Bhishma then got his father married to Chakravarti. Now here we see another thing, like when his father got to know that Bhishma has taken a vow like that he would never get married. For a Kshatriya, it's a terrible vow, because the Kshatriyas are very powerful individuals. They're in the mode of passion. They have a natural tendency to enjoy. And the atmosphere in the palace is so alluring, so tempting, that so many beautiful women, surrounded by beautiful women, they're serving in such an opulent atmosphere, automatically one becomes attracted to sense gratification. Now Bhishma takes a vow that he'll never get married, he'll never have anything to do with anyone. And then we see also that the wonderful inconceivable arrangement of material nature. Man proposes, God disposes. Actually, man proposes, destiny disposes. The fisherman so much wanted his daughter's children to become the king. And in due course of time, sons were born, two sons were born. Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. And both the sons died prematurely. Chitrangada died in a battle with a Gandharva, with the same name, Chitrangada. And Vichitravirya became so attached to his young wives, two young wives, Ambika and Ambalika, that he developed tuberculosis. And he died. Now the kingdom is empty, without any successor. Chakravarti is appealing to Bhishma that please get married. In the first he says, please accept the throne, because there is nobody to succeed your father. Vishnu said, look, I took a vow that I'll never have any claim over the throne. Chakravarti had pleaded, it was all for my sake, so and now I am telling you, please take the kingdom. Vishnu was absolutely undaunted. No, I can't, I've taken a vow. And she also appeals to him that to maintain the family line, you get married. Bhishma said, I can't get married. I've taken a vow. She appeals. It is custom, in Vedic culture, it permits the elder brother to procreate in the womb of the widowed wives of his younger brother. Bhishma said, I've taken a vow not to have anything to do with anyone. And finally, Dasdev was invited to procreate in the womb of Ambika and Ambalika. And from Ambika came Dhritarashtra, who was born blind, and from Ambalika, Pandu was born. And then through one of the maid servants, Vidura was born. So this is how these three personalities came. Dhritarashtra was born blind, so he couldn't become the king. But from the name itself we can see how attached he was to hold on to the kingdom. Dhritarashtra. Rashtra means state or kingdom. And Sita,
holding on to it,
although he is unqualified, he is so attached to becoming the king. And then Dhritarashtra has a little hope, a faint hope, that maybe his son will become the king. But in the Vedic culture, the eldest in the family succeeds the family line. He becomes the king. So even before Duryodhana was born, Yudhishthira was born. So his desire was foiled, that his son couldn't become the king. So that was one of the main reasons of the family feud, that Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra could not have the kingdom for himself, although he was actually the natural successor. And then his son also failed to succeed the family line. Yudhishthira became the natural successor to the throne. And that caused the animosity between two of them from their childhood. Not that Yudhishthira Maharaj was attacked, the Pandavas were completely renounced. They were not interested. So that is the attitude of a devotee of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord automatically develop this saintly quality. They are not attached to the material nature. Because they know that the goal of life is not to enjoy the material nature. Our situation in the material nature is only temporary. A devotee knows that. Therefore they are not interested in establishing themselves in the material nature. Rather they are more absorbed in for their spiritual benefit. They try to make spiritual advancement. They try to accumulate spiritual wealth, and that wealth is attachment to Krishna. And apparently we see that Pandavas from the childhood had gone through so many trials and tribulations. Duryodhana tried to poison Bhima. Again we see one thing, that he tried to harm the Pandavas, he tried to kill Bhima, but the result was something else. He poisoned Bhima with the most deadly venom, the poison of the king cobra, Kalkut. And he fed him with this poison, made some laddus, sweet, with this poison, and made Bhima eat when they went on a picnic. And then when Bhima became unconscious due to the effect of the poison, they tied him up, hands by hands and feet, and threw him in the river Jamuna. And Bhima went down the river, and he went to the Nagaloka, the region of the sultans. And while the Nagas were playing, he fell on them. So Nagas became upset, they started to bite him. And then poison of the Naga acted as an antidote to the poison that he was given. And he came back to his senses. He regained his consciousness and he was upset that the snakes were biting him. So he just snapped open his bond and he started to kill the snakes with bare hands. The news reached the king of the sultan, Vasuki, that one human child is killing all the snakes like this. So they became curious, and Vasuki came to see him along with his minister, and then they recognized that Bhima was actually their descendant in a family line. So they invited Bhima to brought him to the palace and treated him very nicely and made him drink the nectar. and they gave him, and Bhima drank 8 pots of nectar. And as a result of that, he slept for 8 days. He became, and then after that, when he came back to his senses, they arranged for him to return to his mother. So he went back to his mother, came back. Now, Duryodhana tried to kill Bhima because Bhima was so strong. And now drinking this nectar, Bhima acquired the strength of 10,000 elephants. Just a little boy had the strength of 10,000 elephants. An inconceivable amount of prowess. So we can see that how Duryodhana was trying to harm the Pandavas, but all his efforts failed. And to go back to that, today's class, so Pandavas, the Duryodhana even tried to kill them. And by burning them in a house of shellac. But they also, they escaped that situation. And they were wandering in disguise as brahmanas. But it so happened that during Draupadi Swayambara, they also happened to be there, and Arjuna won Draupadi. Then they came brought back. Then they came back to the palace. Vidura actually went and informed Dhritarashtra. Actually, when Vidura informed, he said Dhritarashtra knew that Draupadi Swayambara was going to happen, and Duryodhana and others are going to go there. And so after that, Vidura came and told the Kuru dynasty has once again been blessed and glorified. So Dhritarashtra thought that maybe Duryodhana won Draupadi. But then, so he said, yes, bring her to the palace and offer her most wonderful ornaments, and with that grief fell into the family. And then Vidura broke the news that it was not Duryodhana, it was actually Arjuna who won Draupadi. And not only that, the Pandavas were still alive. Dhritarashtra, although internally was burning with frustration and envy, externally he displayed, oh, that's such a good news, bring them back. I am so happy to hear that Pandu sons are still alive. This is how they were brought, and half of the kingdom was given to them, Yudhishthira Maharaj. But what part of the kingdom? The part of the kingdom that was barren, Khandaprastha. The barren piece of land, there was nothing. It was like a desert. But this is another wonderful thing. Like wherever the pious people go, prosperity automatically comes there. Because the Pandavas went and settled there, in no time the whole place became absolutely prosperous. And eventually Duryodhana became so envious seeing their opulence and prosperity. So then Duryodhana arranged this game of damage along the ill advice of Shakuni. And in that game of dice, Yudhishthira Maharaj lost everything, including himself, including his brothers, and including Draupadi. But eventually, everything was given back to him by Dhritarashtra on Draupadi's appeal. But Duryodhana wanted to again have another game. But the condition of this game was that whoever will lose has to go to the forest for 12 years and live incognito for 1 year. So, in that game also, Yudhishthira Maharaj was lost. So they went to the forest for 12 years, and for 1 year they had to remain incognito. And when they came back, now this is the thing. They came back and they claimed their kingdom. Duryodhana refused. So many people came and gave him good advice, but Duryodhana was not listening. And so finally finally Krishna actually came also with an appeal. Please don't have this back, because this will be very, very devastating. Pandavas will be happy just having 5 villages. You don't have to give half the kingdom, just give them 5 villages. But Duryodhana was not agreeable even to that proposal. And his point was that without a war, I'm not giving the piece of land the size of the tip of a needle. So the war became inevitable. Not only that, he even wanted to arrest Krishna. Duryodhana thought, now Krishna is here alone. So if Krishna can be arrested, so without Krishna, the Pandavas will become absolutely weak. So let's arrest Krishna, keep him in prison, and then go to the war and defeat the Pandavas, kill them all. But then when he came with his army to arrest Krishna, Krishna showed his universal force. But even in spite of seeing Krishna's universal form, Duryodhana could not accept Krishna. Such an unfortunate soul. And then finally Vidura is advising Dhritarashtra. He told him that banish your son, put him in, drive him out of the kingdom. He is going to be the destroyer of the whole family. And Vidura has been telling that right from the birth, from the time of Duryodhana's birth, he had been telling that. Because when Duryodhana was born, all kinds of inauspicious signs started to appear. Like it started to rain hot and blood. It's all kinds of inauspicious signs became apparent, became visible. And on top of everything, the newborn baby started to bray like an ass. So Vidura could understand that this boy is going to be the cause of the destruction of the entire dynasty. So he told Dhritarashtra, this child is going to be the cause of the destruction of the whole family. So reject him, throw him away, kill him. But Dhritarashtra could not accept the good advice of Vidura. And since that time, time and time again, Vidura warned Dhritarashtra. But Dhritarashtra never listened to his good advice. And here also he said the same thing, that banish him from the kingdom, or put him in prison, or ask Duryodhana to kill this boy, kill this miscreant. So in being insulted like that, right in front of himself, Duryodhana couldn't tolerate that. So Duryodhana insulted Vidura, comparing him to a dog, or even worse than a dog. That he is eating our food and doesn't display any loyalty to us. And he said that, throw him away from here. With his life airways. So Vidura accepted that opportunity. He dropped his bow and arrow at the doorsteps and walked away. And he took advantage of the situation and he started to wander to the holy places in a pilgrimage. And this is how eventually he came across Maitreya Rishi. This is a very interesting chapter that is described in the third and fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vidura's conversation with Maitreya Rishi. So, in one hand, Vidura was asked to leave the palace as if it being insulted and as if in a very, very unfortunate situation. But for Vidura, it turned out to be a wonderful opportunity to travel around the holy places and then eventually meet Maitreya Rishi and receive such wonderful advice from him. Thank you all very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Does anybody have any question or comment? Yes.
So Vidura was not silent.
No, Bhishma.
Oh, Bhishma. Yeah. You see, Bhishma's thing is he was more concerned about the moral course. He was more involved in morality, sense of morality. Like, he gave the justification why he was, because, you see, he was thinking that Yudhishthira Maharaj, in that game of dice, lost. So Draupadi became their property. And when it is your property, then, you know, you can do whatever you want to do with that. So that was his consideration. But Draupadi actually came up with another counter question to Bhishma and other assembly. Like, that was the consideration of the members of the assembly at that time. That did Yudhishthira Maharaj lose her before losing himself or after losing himself? Now, if Yudhishthira Maharaj lost her after losing himself, does he have any right to take her in that guise? So that was Draupadi's question, which Bhishma could not actually answer. And his answer was, the path of dharma, path of morality, is very, very fine. And it is difficult to discern, difficult to ascertain what is right from the wrong. That is, you see, and another thing, this was one consideration. Another consideration was that in the Vedic culture, the custom is that no one can go against the king. No one can go against the king's decision. King has the absolute right to decide in his kingdom. So since Duryodhana was the king and he was his subordinate, therefore he could not protest, because that would tend them out to a revolt, which was extremely unbecoming. So this was the thing. Now this actually, this point actually also can be clarified from one incident. When Bhishma was lying in the bed of arrows, Yudhishthira Maharaj came to see him along with Krishna and others. And at that time, Bhishma gave advice to Yudhishthira Maharaj, the moral person, advice on morality. And Varnashram also. Like, he gave him very good advice. So at that time, Bhishma noticed that there was a trifle smile in Draupadi's face. Draupadi was smiling. So Bhishma asked Draupadi, why you are smiling? So Draupadi then told him that where was your wisdom when these Kurus were trying to disrobe me in the royal assembly? Then Bhishma said that at that time my blood was contaminated by the food eaten by the Kauravas. Because I was eating their food, my blood became contaminated. And as a result of that, my consciousness became clouded. But now that blood has, all that blood has been drained out of my body. And that's why now I got my pure consciousness back. So this is how bad is the association of evil association, influence of evil association. Yes. One reason is because Balaram, Duryodhana was Balaram's favorite student. He taught him the art of fighting with men. Gada. So that's why he has a soft corner for Duryodhana. And the other consideration is that Balaram is the hope for the hopeless. So that's why he showed some sort of inclination to a children. Okay, there is some written questions. Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my obeisances to you. Why Bhishma took the vow of celibacy simply to please his father? It appears to be mundane. There is no pleasure of Lord. So how to understand from this story? Well, you see, Mahabharata is not dealing with your devotional service. Mahabharata is basically dealing with codes of conduct, morality, and mundane virtue. So, in simple words, you can say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu still didn't come. That's why Mahabharata is devoid of pure devotional service, which means every action should be motivated by giving the pleasure to the Lord. Mahabharata is basically dealing with morality. People are given the understanding of simple morality. Oh, listen to your father. But then Prabhupada came and said, don't worry about your father and mother, just surrender to Krishna and then your father and mother also will be delivered. Disciples supposed to obey the instructions of his spiritual master. How do we see from the past times when Bhishma did not hear from Parashuram and he fought with him? Apparently, it seems that he was attached to his vow of not marrying
to please his spiritual master, than to please his spiritual master.
Yeah, you see, Bhishma actually makes a point there. He quotes from the scriptures. You see, Parashurama told him that you listen to what I am saying. But Bhishma's response was, I have taken a vow and it is my duty to stick to my vow. So that is the consideration of morality. And that is one consideration. And this other consideration is that Parashurama was Bhishma's guru, Astra Shikshaku. His guru who taught him military science. He was not his spiritual master who gave him Krishna. So that is why Bhishma was in a position to disregard his instruction. Rather, Bhishma told him, indirectly rejected. He says that Guru Rakko Abalipkashya Karja Karjam Ajanata Utpasa Pratipannasya Paritagavishya. If the Guru doesn't know what to do and what not to do, and this way he becomes degraded, not really knowing how to advise and how to guide, then that Guru should be rejected. So Parashurama became furious when he heard that. And he wanted to kill him. And Bhishma also fought with him. Just as Vidura was again and again giving advice to Dhritarashtra, even though he didn't listen to him, so in our lives, how this can be applied as when we give some advice to someone, but if he doesn't listen for once or twice, then we don't feel like giving any advice further to him. So can you please guide how practically we can apply this principle? Well, if he doesn't want to accept your advice, give him some Krishna Prasad. Maybe by eating Krishna Prasad, his consciousness will get purified and he will come to the right sense. Don't give up. So my point is, Hare Krishna Maharaj, please help me. I need your opinion. Can we understand Lord's greatness by hearing and studying his creative part, that how beautifully he created this world, though it is just a jail? Yeah, if the jail is so beautiful, can you imagine how his palace will look like? So that's why we should try to get out of here and go back to the spiritual realm in his service. And the jail also becomes a path, becomes spiritualized when you serve Krishna. In the jail, those who are serving the king, are they prisoners? No. Because they are serving the king, they are not in prison. So yes, by seeing the beautiful creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can develop our attachment to him. That if he creates the jail in such a wonderful way, if the prison house is so beautiful, how wonderful will be his kingdom.
Is there any more questions? Okay.
These are also more questions. What are practical ways to try to come to the level of Madhyama Adhikari from Kanishtha Adhikari? Many times I think that I am a good devotee. Very good. Yeah. Not only think that you are a good devotee, you become a very good devotee. And the way to become a good devotee is by Srinadopi Suni Chena Karoriva Shahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sada. At least this much you can do. Consider yourself more fallen than a blade of grass. Become very, very humble. Become tolerant without desiring any respect for yourself. You offer all respect to others. And in this way, you chant the holy name of the Lord all the time. Here both the lines are taken because, you know, father's side and mother's side. So because she was, because he was born of a maid servant, he was not seen as a part of the family. From the father's side, yes, they were connected, but he did not inherit the kingdom. Because he was the son of a maidservant. A maidservant's son doesn't have the right. But the queen's children have the right to the kingdom. Therefore, Ambika's son and Ambalika's son were the rightful successor to the throne, but not the ruler. Eldest son gets the throne. Duryodhan was eldest even though Dhritarashtra was blind. So why he did not get the throne? No, Duryodhan was not the eldest. Yudhishthira Maharaj was born before him. And as a result of that, Gandhari became so upset that she was carrying the womb for 2 years and still the child was not born. And she gets the news that Yudhishthira Maharaj is already born. So in utter frustration, she hits her abdomen so hard that she had a miscarriage. And as a miscarriage, a lump came out which was hard as iron. And everybody thought it was a miscarriage. And Gandhari was blessed by Vyasadeva that she would become the mother of 100 sons. So Gandhari started to wail, saying that what happened to Vyasadeva's benediction, Vyasadeva's blessing upon me. So at that time Vyasadeva came there and he asked them to collect 100 pots filled with ghee, and then he sprinkled water on them, and those lumps split into 100 pieces, and he put all the pieces on those pots, and he asked them to keep it there, and as a result of that, after 2 years, 100 children appeared from there and headed by Jesus. Is it true that Kshatriya, when challenged, has to do anything, even if he is challenged to do something wrong? Not some, anything. Generally, when a Kshatriya is challenged to fight, and when a Kshatriya is challenged to a game of dice, he cannot proceed. A devotee is rewarded by sticking to his own dharma. The envious are punished by their own karma. When does a devotee retaliate? In very times, in Vedic times, Brahmanas would forgive while Kshatriyas punish the wrongdoers. But what is desired in modern ISKCON scenario, when the classification in varnas isn't clear? Okay, the point is that Brahmanas forgive whereas the Kshatriyas punish. So, what should we do in this age? In this age, because of Varnashankara, there is no defined Varna classification. But since we have joined ISKCON, and Prabhupada has designed ISKCON to create Brahmanas, try to act like a Brahmana. Don't try to act like a Kshatriya. And on top of everything, try to act like a Vaishnava. Because the Vaishnava platform is the ultimate perfection of Brahminical culture. So, so many questions. Well, I think three more questions are there. I'll take these three last questions. Hare Krishna Maharaj, is this verse, in this verse it is said that Vidura was not sorry for quitting the palace. At the same time, it is stated that he was insulted with words of Duryodhana, ears pierced by arrow, afflicted to the core of the heart. So whether Vidura was afflicted or disturbed? Well, when Duryodhana was insulting him, it did afflict him, it did trouble him. But when he walked out of the palace, then he forgot everything. Then he was perfectly composed. And then he considered that this was the divine arrangement of the Supreme Personality of God. Hare Krishna Maharaj, sometimes when we try to follow the principle of becoming more humble than a blade of grass, we are mistaken as someone not confident in ourselves, and the confidence of others in us also goes. Please give me a suggestion on this. Well, when you become humble as a blade of grass, at least you can rest assured that the devotees will appreciate you. Non-devotees may not recognize your exalted position. Neophytes may not be able to appreciate your action, but you can rest assured that the community of devotees will appreciate, and on top of everything, Krishna will appreciate when you become as humble as a blade of grass, or more humble than a blade of grass. How to increase taste for the holy name during chanting mind wonders? Mind wanders, so when it wanders, if you are realizing it's wandering, what should you do? Allow the mind to wander or bring him back? So if you are realizing that the mind is wandering, bring him back. don't be lazy. And the second consideration is that try to listen to the holy name. Mind should be focused on the sound vibration, because that is how we receive the holy name. Sound is received with which sense? Ears. The sound vibration must be heard. So focus your mind on the sound, listening to the sound vibration. So that is the way to focus or fix your mind onto the holy name. And when you do that, then the rest will automatically happen. Krishna's form will become manifest from the holy name. Krishna's qualities will become manifest. Krishna's pastimes will become manifest. All these will become manifest. So it's only a matter of sincere practice and the result will be there. So I'll stop now. It's already quite late. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Thank you.